Welcome to This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, a weekly show where we interview the people making the magic happen in the UK craft beer scene, sponsored by Beer Nuts, premium crunchy-coated peanuts for beer. This Week in Craft Beer publishes the UK's leading craft beer newsletter every Monday morning by email. To subscribe for free, please visit our website at thisweekincraft.beer. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Andy and Andrew from Abyss Brewing, based near Lewes in East Sussex. Andrew has owned the Pelham Arms pub in Lewes since 2008, and in 2016 he stepped up his home brewing in the cellar of the Pelham Arms, which is affectionately known as the Abyss, before taking over the Old Black Cat Brewery a few miles up the road in Uckfield in 2017 to create Abyss Brewing with his friend, also confusingly called Andy. Andy. Hello. And Andrew, please introduce yourself and tell me about your beer journey and how you came to start Abyss in 2017.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
I'm Andy of the Abyss. Good evening, Rob.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, so it started in the cellar of the Pelham, and well, it started as home brewing first, really.
Maybe even 20 years before when we met at art school.
Maybe, yeah. Well, Andrew. Yeah, okay, so our friendship started maybe at 93. We were both at art school, and we just sort of spent a lot of time researching beer back then as well, and have done for a very long time together. And we all got into hoppy kind of craft beers quite early on with, well, pre-craft really, you know, like Jaipur and Hophead by Dark Star. And then, you know, Brewdog came on the scene, and original Punk IPA, which was, you know, was pretty amazing. And we'd both been over to the States, I think, and I'd had like the Brooklyn beers in New York. My brother lived out there, so I'd been out there and experienced those. And so, you know, started thinking about loads of different beers, and then being in the pub industry as well, and just wanting to sort of expand my horizons, really, and started homebrewing and experimenting with that, which, as probably most homebrewers would vouch for, starts pretty badly, and stays quite bad for quite a while. But you start to hone a style, maybe. I got to the point where the beer was tasting pretty good and I wanted to do something more with it. So we had this space under the pub in the cellar, which wasn't used that often. It was a really small little tunnel. Such a little tunnel, which had the old boiler in. And at the end of the tunnel, it went through to the crypt of the church next door. It was stoned up, but the priest had previously been round when he had a few drinks in the pub, and I'd shown him it, and he'd explained it exactly the same thing. So it was a tunnel between the pub cellar and the church
crypt. Extraordinary. Which used
to and from. So, you know, the Abyss kind of sounded pretty good. And I just bought a 100-litre pots and pans-style brew kit, and got a brew license and started making beer down there. And the pub's leased from a family brewer, so it's a tied pub, but I'd been with them quite a while, and they said, I told them what I was going to do.
Right.
And they agreed to for us to have a tap on the bar. It had to be draft only, not cask. So we started learning how to keg beer, and we used to condition in the keg. So we used key kegs originally to condition in the keg, because you can do that in the back. We started producing the beer to sell across the bar, and we spent almost a year doing that, getting feedback directly from the pub's customers. And that's kind of how we sort of started dialing in flavors in the early days. Yeah, that's how we got going, I guess.
So, gents, why the Abyss? Can you give me a bit of background to that? It's a curious name for a beer business.
The Abyss was born under Lewes in the cellar of Andrew's pub, the Pelham Arms. But we also see it as a very positive place. So the Abyss is the idea of in the darkness, step into the darkness, take a chance in life, and you'll find the light. So do what we do, take a chance, start a business, and only good things can come of it.
Yeah, if you step into the Abyss, you don't plunge, you float. It's about taking a chance. And in Eastern philosophy as well, you know, the Abyss is the same as heaven or nirvana as well. It's seen as a positive thing. It's not, you know, in the way linguistically where we see it, it's like a dark thing, you know, something. It has a bigger meaning to that. And you know, we've come out of the cellar and we're going to spread light and good vibes, I suppose.
It handily applies to the beer as well. Dark to the light, the whole range.
Yeah.
Tasty Abyss.
So many reasons.
Excellent answer. Like that a lot. And Andy, you were involved from day one of the cellar or the Abyss experiment in the crypt.
Yeah, I mean, I had another job at the time, so often Andy'd be sweating away in the cellar. And mainly at night, we'd kind of come together and taste and talk and much as together about recipes. I've always been very good at tasting. That's a particular gift. Still honing that art.
It's something you have to work at, isn't it?
It is. No, lifetime's work. Got more involved when we eventually burst out the pub cellar because we could only produce 2 kegs a week.
Right.
And once word got around in kind of our side of Lewis, where there wasn't much of this sort of hoppy beer happening,
right,
it became very popular. And it's sort of interesting that it kind of changed the culture of Andrew's pub as well. It kind of started bringing in a different customer and you saw sort of increase in sales, didn't you, on the back of that? It was
I mean, having a craft beer offer in a pub which previously didn't have a craft beer offer, and this wasn't, you know, that long ago really. It was only recently. It was beginning of 2017 when we started doing that. Prior to that, you know, we had like a branded range of lagers and the family brewer ales, and that was the beer offer. So putting a tap on the bar and having the craft offer, not only did we sell that beer and run out of it quite regularly, we were also selling more of everything else because you get the reciprocal sales. So it's nice. Kind of a good thing in that respect. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think there could be a lesson there somewhere, couldn't there, for pubs in general, perhaps. But
The beer drinker drives drives people to the pub because the beer drinker usually wants to drink a specific kind of beer, don't they? Whereas maybe other drinkers are less focused on what they really want. I'm quite happy-go-lucky, but it's certainly helped move things on with the pub trade as well.
Let's talk about this first beer. Sabro Road Trip, 5.6% IPA, single hop with Sabro, of course, hence the name. I think it's absolutely delicious, but I'm definitely getting some tropical fruit from it. Obviously, as you would expect, it does have a hint of coconut, but not overwhelmingly so. I think you've got it nicely balanced. I've had Sabro beers that come up too coconutty. This one doesn't. I think you've got a really nice balance with the sort of sherbety fruit flavours. So I think it's an excellent example of an IPA. What's your thoughts on it, guys?
I'm really happy with it. I like the simplicity of the Road Trip range. So let single hops kind of sing, and we haven't actually used Sabro before either, so it is a good experiment for me to actually get a feel for what it's like by itself. And I like it. I really like hops which aren't classic. I mean, I love all the classic kind of hops which, you know, most people use, but the Sabro, it's got a different kind of has got a different vibe to it. The coconut vibe is really nice. It's got that apricot as well, I think, as well as all the citrus flavors. It's a bit more out there, which we like to try and for our beers to be a bit more out there anyway in terms of the hop profile. And we, you know, there's a few kind of little kind of secrets in how we do that, but the Sabro is Sabro because it is just Sabro, and the body is really really clean. It's kind of, it's pale, extra pale, and wheat, and that's all it is. Vermont style kind of yeast strain going on. It's got those kind of helps with the fruitiness. Unusually for us, it was dry hopped after fermentation because we usually dry hop during fermentation because we wanted to crop yeast from it. So it's different in that way. So it is really, you know, it's come out really clean. I think it's got a really clean kind of IPA flavor. Low bitterness, like most our beers, you know, quite a soft water profile. The beer is just sounds really cliche, just like canvas for the hops to sing. I'm cringing as I say that. But that's kind of how it is really. And yeah, I have no idea how it's going to turn out. It's turned out nice. It's good.
This is the fourth edition of Road Trip, I think.
Simcoe. Azaka, Simcoe, Comet.
Right.
This is Sabro, yeah.
And over what period of time? That's in the last 6-9 months, isn't it, or so?
Yeah.
And so you've got, but you prepared to tell me what the next one is, just as a bit of a reveal?
Yeah, we got Centennial in the tank at the moment.
Okay, nice. Okay.
Again, going back to the old school sea hop.
Yeah. I look forward to that. That's I'm quite partial to a nice Centennial IPA. You don't see too many of them these days, so God, that'd be good. Yeah. Brilliant. And that'll be a few weeks away from being available in can, or?
available in Cannes, hopefully in a few weeks. Yeah, all going to plan.
Okay, excellent. Very good. Well, I think it's turned out really well. It's I'd be curious to get back to the Pelham Arms, how much influence having a fairly traditional pub as your test bed has had on your beer direction. I mean, it sounds as though actually not that much, to be honest with you. You've done your own thing and please your craft beer leanings anyway. But do you try and accommodate your cast beer customers at all with the direction of the Abyss beers? Or
I don't think we do really. I think we're interested in making the kind of beers that we've always enjoyed drinking together. So IPAs with big personalities is really what we're trying to do. Like one of our biggest selling beers is Tropical Thunder, which is a beer we brewed from the start and has been evolving ever since.
I had that one. Yep.
And people, it's a real favourite in Lewis and now Brighton. It's got a bit of a little following behind it. You know, you drop it off places and people are like, oh, blimey, people love this. You know, it's a little bit kind of noise, but it's quite 6.2. And just people just tell these stories of how they just had a epic night on it and they just loved it. And nice. it makes us really happy. It's like, it's kind of what we're, we made beer to have fun and want other people to enjoy it as well. So it's really, really pleased to hear feedback like that and create a beer that's kind of unique. That's kind of quite a thing in itself, I think. I think Andrew's done a really amazing job as a brewer, keeping on chipping away at doing his own thing.
Right. Yeah, the Tropical Thunder is a good example of, I guess, the approach we have, because it started in the cellar of the pub, the first batches of that beer, and it's something we've always brewed since, I'd have to look up which gal it was, but mm-hmm. it was really early on that we started doing that beer. It had another name then, and it's evolved and grown with time, and it changed over time as well. All the beers do that. They're always evolving and they keep them relevant as well. So it's kind of, Tropical Thunder, I guess you could call it a core range beer for us, because right. It's one we have mostly available most of the time, along with a couple of others. If you tried it now, I have no idea whether it tastes anything like it, but it's a journey, it's always tweaking it, always trying to make it better, always trying a little different part of the process,
right?
Changing part of the balance between the which hops we're using in it, change the water profiles. That's something which over the last 18 months we've been playing around quite a lot with, kind of found, I think, our vibe there at the moment. Tropical Thunder for us is almost, I wouldn't say it's a flagship beer, but it's like mm-hmm. it's the old favourite.
It's just very juicy. You've got to watch yourself on that stuff.
Yeah, it's juicy and it's got a good different kind of hot flavour going. It's not dissimilar to Sabro, really. You got a bit of coconut going on. You got a bit of grapefruit going on and mango. You got all those kind of things, but it's a little bit different. It is quite tropical. Some people call it pina colada. It's like drinking pina colada.
Yeah.
Which I quite like. it's good.
What are the hops in Tropical Thunder?
Mostly it's Citra, Azaka, and then there's Sriracha and some Chinook as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. At different points, aroma and dry hopping. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what percentage of your beer are you canning these days compared to keg?
Not very good at spreadsheets, so we're not actually sure.
Yeah, canning's been kind of a huge. We suddenly jumped on it in March.
Yep. So like a lot of people, yeah.
yeah, but well, I mean, terrible signs of COVID, but for us it gave us actually a chance to do canning because we haven't had the capacity. So for us it was exciting in that respect.
Yep.
And we're back on trade now. I mean, the cool room is never that full, but it probably might be 50-50. I don't know. Yeah. It's a juggling act. Constantly.
Yeah. I think cans in sales terms are about a third now.
Okay.
Of where we are, whether what equates to volume, I'm not sure. We'd have to drill that a little bit to find a definitive answer. But which is great for, where are we? September. So it's 5 months since lockdown, and yeah, we were all keg prior to that, pretty much.
Right.
We'd played with canning a little bit, but we were selling everything in keg. We couldn't keep enough keg beer available. Bars dropped off the cliff as everything shut down,
and unfortunately,
we directed to canning, and now everything's open back up again. So it's the juggling act of trying to keep both things available to people.
Yeah, of course, you can probably actually satisfy neither party, unfortunately, but can only do your best, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We're growing, adding more tanks all the time, and as we grow, the beer gets sold. And
do you make sure you've always got keg beer available for the Pelham, or do you even sell out there sometimes?
We were selling out prior to lockdown. We were selling out. Since reopening, it's different hours, and I don't think we're selling out there at the moment. That we are limited to the amount we can sell with the agreement I have with the, you know, with the landlords.
Oh, okay, right, makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
But with our kind of current opening hours, I think it's available most of the time. We used to sell out all the time, and we used to put it on a Thursday and have two kegs, and would say when it's gone, it's gone.
Right,
and it was gone by Saturday lunch. You know, nice. That was it. So,
yeah.
But now we can sell more. So
I noticed that you've been selling 1 liter bottles quite successfully, delivering locally, and I get and picking up from the pub as well. How, you know, that's obviously been a nice innovation that your customers appreciate. I wish I could pick those up locally. And is that something you'd like to, you imagine continuing when we get back to normal? Or
yeah, we're really focused on that. Fresh Abyss Fridays. That's definitely a fixture here to stay. We deliver throughout Sussex every Friday, order before midday, and then we pour the beers off at midday, and then we go out in a few vans and deliver all the way along the coast from Lewes, Seaford, all the way through Brighton, Worthing, Littlehampton, Bognor, along Arundel, along the way to Chichester, and then inland we go to Haywards Heath, Burgess Hill, and it's proved really popular. And what was really nice in lockdown doing the fresh beer was people in Lewes were coming to collect it from the Pelham twice a week, and we'd be there pouring. We kind of took over the Pelham and poured fresh beer every twice a week. And we'd have a line around the block of locals, and it gave us an opportunity to meet people who are drinking our beer regularly, which we hadn't had before so clearly. And that was really lovely. You know, it was quite a kind of communal spirit, and they were really pleased to get out of the house, and kind of, you know, they were really appreciative that we were doing it. And that was a really great moment for us.
No, that sounds amazing. And as you say, it's a terrific way to build that really strong bond with your best customers, basically, obviously the people that are really prepared to go out of their way. And so that's terrific. And you can't buy that type of customer interaction, can you? That's superb. And those guys are going to be, hopefully, you know, loyal to your business for years to come.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just talking about the beer, it's always great. Yeah.
Are you not, I mean, as you say, you can't make cask beer to sell in your own pub, but are you not tempted to try your hand at some cask beer for distribution elsewhere?
We'd like to try it. We're always looking for a site where we can sell beer on site. And if that happens, then we'd like to try it then, you know, when we have a tap room.
Right. Yeah. So
where we are at the moment, we'd have mains drain. So it's a little bit tricky with in terms of
cleaning
yeah. And we're very
cask cleaning is a biggie, yeah,
tricky in terms of brewing as well, I should think. It's
yeah, there's a lot of wet vacuuming and a lot of
carrying of stuff, yeah. Unfit as a fiddle.
Yeah
I mean, cask beer would we'd love to do it, because it's exactly what we love to drink. If we, you know, when it's good cask, it's the go-to option, isn't it, really, anywhere. And we sell all our beer in keg and can, and we can't keep up with that. So adding gas to it as well. In our ideal world, yes. And then you need to invest in the, you know, the estate of casks as well, which is a huge investment. And if we have money, it goes into fermenter space at the moment.
Makes sense. Yeah. And then, of course, you've also got the age-old challenge of the fact that cask only sells for 2/3 the price of keg, perhaps, anyway, which is a mystery to everyone. But
well, it's less time in the tank, I think.
Yeah.
But cask beer can be in the tank for a week and a half, whereas probably craft beer might be in the tank for 3 or 4 weeks, and it's holding any tank space because the beer gets conditioned in the cask. So I think that's probably part of the. But you have to be really focused and doing really good cask all the time, I think, to actually make it really, really work.
Yeah, it's the whole industry. It's about specialisation, is it, and expertise, and it's hard to be a master of everything.
I think people are willing to pay a little bit more for good cask. I think there's some good examples in Brighton of great friends of ours with who are doing similar things, and they're just like, well, you know, it's a good beer. We need to charge this much, and they do it and they sell it, you know. So
yeah. Brighton's a specialist market, isn't it? I mean, it's an extremely prosperous city, and it's also of a critical mass that it supports a fantastic beer scene, I think, not just beer, every, you know, restaurants and all aspects of hospitality, really.
Yeah, definitely. Set in context, that remark, yeah, for sure.
Going off in a slightly different direction, I think I've got a, having just chatted you for 20 minutes or so, I've got a pretty good sense of this, but I'd like to hear it in your words. What you think makes you different as a UK craft brewery?
There's a whole world around beer that where beer can bring people together in a different way. The interest that people take in beer and the enthusiasm they have when you say, oh, we've got a brewery, and then, oh, wow, you know, what's it called? And, oh, Abyss, I've heard of Abyss. You suddenly find you're naturally connecting with all sorts of interesting people and in all walks of life doing different cool things. And, you know, one of those is music. So we've made a lot of connections in the local kind of music scene. So we now have a sort of an annual music festival called Super Fuzz Fest, which is
right
named after our IPA,
yep,
but also after a guitar pedal. And we work with our local friends who promote lots of bands from all over the world called they're called Acid Box, and they help us put gigs on.
Fantastic.
We do a Camp Abyss, and we invite friends along to that, and that gets a bit weird and sort of fun in the woods. Take over a farm for a weekend in June.
Wow.
We've got a cycle club. And he's a keen cyclist, and you know, you start to realize the sort of power of beer and it as a currency and what it can do, and that kind of community that you can create, and it's quite exciting. Mm-hmm. So to us, beer it's not just the beer. We want to make amazing beer, but we also want to sort of do good things with it. I don't know. So it's one life, isn't it? You've only got one chance to build these things, and
yep,
kind of we're enjoying our middle years.
Fantastic.
Having a lot of fun, having a lot of fun in the process. You know,
not just beer. We're about events and connections with other kind of creative types, and that's kind of, I guess, where we see it ourselves, and that's kind of what we're, you know, working to develop as well going forward.
I think it might, hopefully for us, if we can find a new home which is bigger and more practical for us and can have a tap room, all of this we can kind of bring together and make it, it'll become a bit more clearer for people what, you know, what we can do, and hopefully they'll want to come and get a piece of the action, you know?
Yeah, an experience as much as just a product, I think.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's how we view it. So, and that experience could be a multifaceted kind of experience.
So in terms of the Pelham Arms then, are you hands-on there?
Yeah.
Are you still fairly hands-on there, or do you have a manager in place?
And I have a fantastic team at the Pelham. I've got a manager. It's a full team doing the hands-on work, who look after everybody and deliver great service and great product. And I talk to them throughout the week and do this stuff in the background as well, you know, involved in running a business. So that's kind of my input now. Yeah. So I've kind of grown it to that, and it's given me the space and time to be able to do the Abyss, because, you know, Abyss Brewing is a brewery and it's physical, and I brew the beer, and we've got some people helping us out now, but it's a time consuming thing. So
one thing I've learned in talking to breweries the past few weeks is it's more than a full-time job, that alone. So the idea of having too much else that you need to be doing day to day is daunting, to say the least.
Yeah, busy.
Excellent, gents. So let's take a break at this stage. This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, is sponsored by Beer Nuts. Beer Nuts is a British company inspired by the European fashion for pairing savoury snacks with different beer styles. Beer Nuts are premium crunchy coated peanuts and come in three great flavours: classic, masala curry and jalapeno. They are packaged in 100% recyclable, plastic-free single-serve cans and are vegan-friendly. Next-day delivery is available from their webshop at beernuts.co.uk, spelled B-I-E-R. Beer Nuts are the ultimate beer pairing snack, perfect for pubs, taprooms, bars, bottle shops and more. For details of a special offer, please see page 7 of our weekly newsletter at thisweekincraft.beer. So I'm back with Andrew and Andy from Abyss for the second half of the show. Gents, let's talk about the Brew Accelerator Prize. I was lucky enough to be at Brew London in February, you know, more or less the last time I got out to any meaningful extent prior to lockdown. And I noticed in doing a bit of research for this that you guys were the recipients of the Brew Accelerator Prize. So that's great. You know, terrific acknowledgement, I think, of your progress and your potential. How do you see that from your side, and how has it made a difference?
Yeah, Brew Accelerator was great. It was one of those moments where you have to kind of just sort of stop and make yourself pull things together and get your house in order and think, right, what is it we're doing? Why, you know, what makes us unique? How can we show other people this? So in February, I just had this mental few weeks of scrabbling together our kind of all of our design work, all of our, you know, the background work we've done, the business plan, and just bringing it all up to date, which is a really great thing to do. You know,
great discipline, absolutely. Even if you don't end up winning, yeah.
you're so busy day to day, most of the time it's easy to let it slip. So by the time we got to Brew London, I think it was 19 breweries started off, and then it got whittled down to three of us had to do a kind of a talk in front of a panel during the beer show, and we thankfully we got a free slot on the show, which was great as well.
Yeah,
and I was sort of showing pictures of our potential, all of our 440 can designs, which was like super exciting for us, and we had them up on a screen and they're rotating and looking cool, and you know, I was talking about what we wanted to do, and then bizarrely, you know, a few weeks later, that was exactly what we had to do. So it was like, it was really fortuitous for us that we got all of our kind of designs together with our designer. This is Jill, and she does all of our can labels, so she did a lot of work before that. And then, you know, a month later, there we were having, you know, getting it all printed, and we were into cans, and we won the competition. So yeah, that was a real lift for us, and you know, it's nice. You know, it's nice to just sort of get acknowledged, I guess, and you know, think, oh, this is you know, we are doing something. This is working. You know,
nice. Absolutely.
You sort of heads down most of the time in it, aren't you? Living and breathing it. in terms of what it's done for us, we've been talking a lot with Daniel from Brew London and some of his friends who do branding and consultancy work, and it's only the last month or so we've had some face to face meetings. It's been difficult, obviously, you know, with
very challenging
things. Yeah. We've had a lot of conversations, but we've really started drilling down what it is we're going to do in the future, and they're really helping us just sort of refine what it is we are, I guess, and that's been really, really inspiring and starting to come to fruition now. Yeah.
I do get a sense that a lot of breweries of a similar size to yours don't have that level of planning. I don't mean that in any way to be disrespectful or consideration for what's next. And I do get a sense a lot of them was kind of making it up as they go along. So I think it should stand you in really good stead to have that level of forethought, and obviously, you know, third party advice is valuable if it's good advice.
Yeah, it's been really great, you know, because the kind of every conversation you have, you just is making you think and making you work harder on exactly what it is you're trying to do, and that's just, you know, that can only be a great thing.
Yeah, it just totally hones your outlook and makes you think about what exactly you should be doing, and it's been really good so far. You know, we're still part of that process of,
yep.
You know,
looking at the Brew London website, they're doing the same thing again this year, and I think they're planning to expand it to 5 breweries with slots at the festival as opposed to 3, I think, as you said, this year. So you know, what advice would you give to a small brewery that was thinking about getting involved at this stage?
Well, you're only magnifying what you are already. You know, you can't make it up. It's like, who are you? What are you trying to do? What are you good at? So think about that, and then write it down. Do whatever you have to do. You know, scribble it, draw it. I don't know. Whatever works for you. But then, and if it's not quite clear enough, do it again and keep thinking. You know, because your strength is who you are and what you're trying to do. And you know, there's so many breweries that are doing brilliant different things. You know, there's tiny sour projects in barns. You know, there's all sorts of things going on, aren't there? So
there certainly are. Yeah,
celebrate what you're doing and just go for it and be confident about what you're trying to achieve.
But as you say, I think that, you know, the value in actually capturing that on paper is, you know, outweighs the potential of winning the award next year. It's actually getting to grips with what you're trying to achieve as a business, and
yes, it's only going to help you. The whole process will only help you. Even if you don't have to win it, it's just like you're putting a lot of you know, brain time and just thinking what do we do best, how can we be better, and
yeah,
yeah.
I was gonna say absolutely, because when you're a small business and there's two people, I mean, up until recently, it was just Andy and I, mm-hmm. and you're doing so much all the time and trying to do everything, you know, you're brewing, which is, you know, a huge, the production is a load of work, and then selling and then marketing and then trying to do all the admin and all that stuff. It's just like it's a bigger job than, you know, you could ever imagine really doing. And then to actually think about having your business plan and your branding and everything is well in place so that you can go off and, you know, grow the business in a sensible way, which will make it hopefully really profitable in the future, as well as being, you know, credible. It's a massive challenge. And, you know, we've gone into this really organically, you know, with quite low personal investments, and we've kind of grown it organically. We've done it all ourselves. So unless you have the benefit, I guess, of some big investment, so you can actually buy that, you know, early days, which wasn't an option for us, just going through the whole process to do that competition really kind of honed your thought. And it was loads of work. I mean, Andy did most of it. It's a lot of work to do, but it's a process which, even if you don't come out on top, I imagine it's going to be hugely beneficial, because it would have honed your thoughts and mind about where you should be heading. And we're fortunate we won, you know.
Fantastic.
It's quite a big fortunate thing.
I mean, if people want to ask us about it, they're welcome to ping me an email. I've had the odd sort of person asking about it. I hope I've got back to them.
Well, that's kind of you, Andy. I'd suggest people hit you up on Instagram or whatever, and
it may be brief, I wish to, you know, do my bit, so please get in touch. But
brilliant. Well, thanks for that. Let's talk about this next beer. This is Neon Velo, 6.7% Belgian IPA, brewed with Abbey yeast and dry hopped with Citra and Simcoe. I think you've really nailed this. It's of course, it has the Belgian yeast backbone, but I think that you've really got the hop flavors beautifully balanced with it as well. So this is absolutely delicious. I'm really enjoying this. It was hard to talk to you for 10 minutes without commenting on it just then, but glad we got to it now. So, well, I've still got some left.
Yeah, we brewed this first for Brew London, actually. Went down a storm at Brew London. Mm-hmm.
Is this your first Belgian IPA?
It is. It's the third. I think it's the third brew of it, which went into can. Yeah, that's right. Actually, Andy just said Pink Flamingo in my ear, and we did play around with a kind of a Brett-like yeast strain in the early days of the cellar, which gave loads of pineapple,
grapefruit,
pineapple. Yeah, and again, this is one of those things we've always thought about doing again, and never, as we've grown, never had the time to come back and do that. And it's kind of, it's always sitting there in the periphery. We also wanted to do something a bit different for Belgian IPA, you know, a Belgian IPA, and we like Belgian beer. Belgian beer is fantastic. You know, it's kind of it's a massive field of beer, which I'm only a novice in.
An enthusiastic really. Consumer of.
Yeah. An enthusiastic consumer of. That's good. I like that. I'll have that sometime. Thank you very much. And, but, you know, put our little stamp on it, make it hoppy. And we tried a few different versions for a couple. And then this one, yeah, I mean, Citra and Simcoe are lovely crowd-pleasing craft beer hops. And that's all it has in it. It goes in the aroma, in the kettle, you know, in the whirlpool, and it goes in the dry hop. Mm-hmm. It's not massively dry hopped, really, compared to some of our other beers. It's quite light on the scale. But the yeast strain, you know, commercially available Belgian yeast strain, is adding loads of nice kind of good yeast esters and aromas, and we fermented it quite cool for that yeast strain as well, so it didn't go OTT. So we try to keep it quite clean. Okay. We've added our kind of standard kind of water profile to it, and it's a clean, not dissimilar to the road trip really. It's wheat and extra pale, you know. We haven't used any caramel malts or anything in it. It's had a little dose of maltodextrin to boost the body, and yeah, it's kind of worked. It was a bit of third go at brewing it. I mean, both the previous ones were good, and you know, we had the first one at the Brew London, and it's you know, it's always gone down well. People like the, because you recognise that the yeast ester, you've drunk Belgian beers before.
Oh, yeah.
As beer people will have, and adding some kind of crowd pleasing hops to it, which is essentially what they are, citrus and co. I do like it. It's quite well
it balanced. makes it a lot more accessible, doesn't it? I think, which is not to say that the market for Belgian beers is small, but there are, I think throwing the, as you say, the crowd pleasing hops in there means that it's a beer which people can come at from the more crafty IPA sort of perspective and still really appreciate this beer, as well as people that appreciate the Belgian flavors.
It sits well within our range as well, because we're kind of known for IPAs with big personalities. So for us to do a Belgian IPA and then have this kind of the modern hops, it kind of makes sense, because it's still, I think, entry-level drinker who's just more used to punk IPA or whatever would still get this beer, we still connect to them with this, which we enjoy, that's kind of how we've made our bread and butter so far, isn't it?
Definitely. And it ties in with, we like the cycling thing.
I was going to say that, obviously. It pays homage to the great Belgian cyclists.
We've actually created our own category of beer as well, called the Benelux IPA, which own. If anyone else tries to do a Benelux IPA, then
they're going to be in trouble. They'll be hearing from your lawyers.
The flatlands, the beauty of the cycling through, Belgium, Holland,
Luxembourg.
Benelux
IPA. I'm not sure if that's confusing or not, but time will tell.
That's fine.
We're open to that feedback.
We're not interested in traditional categories, No. I don't even think about those when we're making beer, so we should create our own.
I actually think it's one of the more logical, created out of thin air categories that I've heard about. I totally get where you're coming from. It has hints of Belgian IPA, but it also is heavily hopped with modern hops, as indeed, you might expect from some of the the higher profile Dutch breweries, De Molen or Oedipus or whatever. Yeah, so it's great.
Maybe new wave Belgian. Maybe we might get away with that. I don't know.
Very good work. So what's next in this line? Can you tease anything? An evolution of this beer, or?
Well, we're getting stronger because our kit is changing, so we can start to get a bit heavier.
Okay.
On the beer front soon, because Andy's ordered the kit.
Yeah, we're restricted by our mash tun size.
Right.
It's a bit undersized, so try and make beers over 6%. You have to do a reduced volume,
right.
Which is isn't ideal. So, or even double mash, which we haven't done yet. We've been talking about it to try and do a dipper, because we're impatient and we want to do that before we've placed an order for a much bigger mash tun, so we can go stronger and bigger, which is the only reason why we haven't done that. I think we would have been doing that beforehand. So
right,
so those kind of beers are on the horizon, and we've never really touched New England IPA, and that's what a lot of people are doing. And we love that kind of beer as well. The collab with St. Mars was
one.
I would say we did a New England IPA. I know our beers are influenced by them, but we've been thinking about maybe doing one of those as well, which we're probably a bit late to the party. But we've been doing other things.
Honestly, that party's got plenty of legs. Don't worry about that. Yeah.
we have a pale ale, New England pale ale called Dreams, which is really popular. It's 5%, but it's not me per research. But it's kind of draws from that. That's been going down really well.
From my perspective, one of the good things about you guys winning the Brew Accelerator Prize was it gave me a bit more background information to draw from, because there was a few articles I managed to Google talking about that and sort of rehashing the story of the brewery, which I appreciated. And one of the comments I saw, and you've already alluded to it earlier this evening, is the fact that you're proactively looking to move to a more urban location, I think was the phrase I picked up this afternoon.
Yeah.
So I guess that means Brighton, considering where you guys are based. And, that's the second most expensive property market in Britain after central London, as far as I understand it. What can you tell me about where you're up to with that?
Well, it's all bubbling away. What can we say? is it just in our minds? Who knows? We're doing some very powerful visualization exercises, cross-legged, a lot of drones, a lot of humming, a lot of breathing. We're just sort of imagining it. and then I'm sure it will come true.
Power of positive thought.
Realization. Yeah, it will appear.
Yeah, a bit of levitation.
We're getting busy now. This is what it's all about.
It's probably about as much as much
fair enough. I won't press you any further. But just one comment in passing, which is that there's, as we mentioned this earlier as well, there's one or two positives to be taken from the mess that we're in this year, and that is that maybe there's a bit more commercial property available at more reasonable prices now than there were at the start of the year. So it might be that will help you along. One of my local breweries here is Phantom Brewing in Reading, who have a pretty big opened into a pretty big industrial unit in October, and in May or June basically persuaded the landlord to lease them the next door unit as well that's been sitting empty for several years. And you know, they basically I'm friendly with the owners of Phantom, and I think that, you know, they drove an amazing bargain with this guy. Basically said, look, you know, we're paying our bills on time, you know, how long are you going to sit with that unit empty, or would you like to lease it to us? And so I think there probably are deals to be struck out there in the current climate, but you know,
we're going to grow, so yeah,
it's going to happen.
We need more space. We'd love a tap room.
So what's the current size of your brew kit, Andrew? I should have asked you this much earlier in the conversation.
13 hectolitres.
Okay, and so you're adding FEs, and you would probably be happy with that as a size, and just more fermenting vessels. Would you
we have six, sort of 12 to 13 hectolitre FEs, and we have one double size at the moment. We've got another double size landing soon. Mm-hmm. So we're dual brewing as well, some of the beers, and the big mash tun will help out with that as well. So that's kind of where we are at the moment. So we're really small.
Your guys' problem is your beers are so popular that they don't even get out of Sussex, you know, they never mind up as far as Berkshire.
We're doing a little bit of distribution, but not loads. So we need to do, it's hard, isn't it?
It's an impossible challenge, isn't it, to figure out, you know, whether it makes sense to try and distribute a bit more widely or not.
We need a funding drive to propel us and buy us more tanks.
A keen investor
would be amazing.
Help us grow our business.
That's the kind of thing. We could pay. Then we can buy loads of tanks and we could sell beer. Beyond the region,
sign the contract for that massive unit in Brighton, and get the tap room off the ground.
Those are the kind of things.
If you continue to visualize
it, Andy, I'm sure.
Just breathe, guys. Wherever you are, just breathe it in. Think about the abyss. In and out.
I mentioned before we started this evening that I was very lucky to visit Brookhouse Hops last week. I'd be curious just to have a quick conversation with you guys about hop. Where do you get your hops from? And in particular, how do you find availability? Have you been able to get the hops that you need, or are you adapting recipes based on what you can get?
So one nuance which we really enjoyed, unfortunately, we can't do it at the moment because we've stopped using leaf hops, but there's a wonderful grower really close to our brewery, about 10 miles away, Dorothy. She has her own hop farm.
That's lovely. Yeah.
And I was there last year at harvest time and watched this incredible machine, like sort of Willy Wonka style, kind of rattling series of conveyor belts, or kind of creaking away, steam.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Piling out, so they feed the branches in one end, and then they keep getting pummeled through these little outlets at the other end. Next thing you're in this host house, and this dude's like pushing around, you know, just piles and piles of beautiful green hops, and then pushing them down to sacks, and it was just like this incredibly...
It's pure magic, yeah.
Yeah, stunning. But one thing we did do with Dorothy was we made a new English IPA, we called it.
Okay.
So it was all English hops and as local as possible, but in a New England style, and we used to sell that to trade in kegs. You know, our customers will remember it.
Right.
Probably 18 months ago now, but that was...
Maybe 2 years...
Yeah, we were quite into that New English IPA. Yeah, we'd like to do it again, but it's just...
Sounds brilliant, yeah.
Tricky, more sort of pellet-based now, but yeah. Yeah, we're doing okay for getting hold of hops at the moment.
We have changed them in the past, you know, the recipes a little bit, depending on availability. You know, when we were smaller, it was, you know, you can get a contract, so you're just spot buying and
Yeah,
was available and thought you'd be okay with this hop. And then suddenly everyone bought it, it became popular or something like that happened. And, you know, then you'd have to sort of change direction. And some of the beers, you know, the way they are has been probably partly kind of influenced by that. We've got contracts now. So I mean, you know, we buy from a few different places.
Let's talk about social media. You guys have pretty good Instagram game, which is not in any way intended to be an insult. I think you're present and acknowledged and recognized and applauded on Instagram. Lauded might be a better word. So what's your strategy when it comes to social media and online reviews in general?
Strategy. Interesting. Yeah, what is the strategy?
What does that word mean?
Yeah, that would involve planning, wouldn't it?
And, it would.
Spreadsheet.
It must surely have been in your Brew London pitch, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Got someone else to type that bit. I mean, our kind of background is in we were making documentary films originally, and then since then we've many strings to our bows, music promotion. Some of us have done a bit of comedy, others have been entrepreneurs, and we've got a very great little network of friends who are very enthusiastic beer drinkers who love helping us create and kind of mold what we're trying to do. So we get help sort of creating some sort of fun visuals to trying to kind of advertise the beer, I guess.
But, content, and he's talking about content.
Content, yeah. Yeah.
Your content and media savvy, which is a great skill to have in this.
But if you look on our Instagram and on the stories, we're quite proud of our kind of all of our, the little adverts we've done for our beer and the content we've provided. So every new beer we do, there'll be a little advert will pop out with quite a, you know, some nice, you know, some good music and have a bit of fun with it. And hopefully it kind of, the idea is that it kind of jumps out of your phone and blows your mind a bit and makes you think, ah, I might try that.
Those guys are back. They're back with a new beer.
Yeah. And why not, you know? So
absolutely, yeah.
Check it out. See what we're talking about. And then try not to buy Abyss, right?
What about Untappd? Do you pay much attention to it? Do you engage with it?
I look at it most days. I don't engage with it actually, but I look at it as a little steer, you know, because it's a good way to kind of get a feel of what, you know, a demographic of beer drinkers think about it, think about what we're doing. So it's one part of the equation of how you think about the way that people are responding to beer. I mean, one's sales, obviously. One's the direct feedback from customers that we get. One's the direct feedback from bars, whether they buy the same beer again and say, oh, it's really good. And then Untappd is another kind of element to that. I don't live and breathe Untappd, and we don't brew beers for Untappd either. It is quite a kind of a hype beer kind of savvy platform, I think. You know, if you're just doing cask ale, you know, or lager,
forget about it. Yeah,
you forget about it. But if you're doing like banging kind of
imperial stouts and tippers, and
if you're anything kind of that end of the spectrum, then you know, anyone who you're gonna score. You know, great, and we're, you know,
so you're cool. In the middle there somewhere, aren't you? Yeah,
we're in the middle. Yeah. You know, and it is going up as well, which is nice to see. And I look at that because it's like
your average rating,
only one measure.
The brewery rating is a good.
So I do look at the beers, and you know, if they're rating, you know, above the brewery score, then that's a positive, isn't it? But it is just one part of the whole picture of what push you forward. Because at the end of the day, it's a business, and you know we want to try and make it profitable and, you know, earn a living from it. So it's kind of, you have to balance that with it as well. And we aren't brewing full on kind of.
You're not doing crowd pleasers to the extent that several breweries I could mention are. That's for sure.
And so there's some breweries in great. I mean, I'm influenced by all those breweries as well, and I love the ones that, you know, who are doing that stuff, and always have done. But it's not necessarily what we're about. So, you know, we're about kind of trying to do our own thing and do our own niche. You know, be a bit kind of off centre with it. So. You know, we've produced beers which we thought were good, and they've been tragic on tap. Well, you know, there you go. That's that. But then things can be misunderstood as well, because there's a certain thing that people want. So it's a good measure, and I do look at it regularly and filter it. I'm used to this as well, because having the pub for 12 years, you've got TripAdvisor and Google reviews.
Yeah,
and
that's right. So you're immune to the worst excesses of it, but you understand the value of it as well.
And you realise, now you step back from it and just view it as one thing. And, you know, there's a TripAdvisor reviewer, and there's a Google reviewer, and there's a Facebook reviewer, you know, and they're all got different ideas, and you just sort of just let it kind of let it be and read them. And you feel you need to take from it. But the important thing is growing and selling more beer, isn't it? And more people liking the beer and more people becoming part of what you're about. So
definitely. Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's a very balanced...
ramble enough.
No, that was good. Good rambling, though. Good rambling. This is a follow-on to that. So how do you research beers? How do you decide what's next? Apart from Andy doing all the tasting and...
Yeah, Andy does all the tasting. I'm the classic fickle craft beer drinker, where it's very rare I buy the same beer twice. And I've got a local bottle shop near me, and there's a couple in the area which you can go to, and you drink different beers, and you know what you're looking for, and you know, then you go to bars, and you know, we're fortunate to be in Brighton, and you can see stuff going on there. And then, you know, we both love traveling, and you go and drink different beers in different places. I'd love to do the US more. I've only done New York and Chicago, and had some really good experiences in both those places. And Berlin as well. Been to Berlin a couple of times, and done the German thing. And
have you got a little black book of your next 20 beers you want to brew, or, you know, how do you decide on styles? And
we kind of smash our heads together. Yeah, we keep up the research. Just talk about the beers we love, and I think we're kind of organically growing a bit of a business aesthetic that kind of.
Yeah.
As we kind of learn more about who we are, and we learn about our audiences, and it's like, you know, what's gonna tick all the boxes for everyone.
And it actually comes from two directions, I think, as well, because sometimes we have an idea for a beer, I think, that's it. We want to do that. What should we call it? And then sometimes we've got a really good beer name, and it's like, what should that beer be? And, you know, is a bit of both of those things as well, because we're always thinking about what the beer is going to be like, what the branding's going to be like, what's the personality of that beer. And so it comes from both directions. So it's a kind of it's quite a fluid thing. Yeah. We don't have a black book with 20 beers ahead.
No,
we're, you know, maybe a week ahead.
This time next week, who knows? Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is what we call the shout out for the little guy, where I will invite you to mention a local beer business. It might be a brewery, but it might be a bottle shop or a pub other than the one that you own, Andrew. That you'd like to bring to the attention of the audience as being a contributor to your success and just doing great work to advance the culture and the ecosystem.
So I'm not allowed to mention the Pelham Arms in Lewis.
No, we've already clogged that one to death, I'm afraid. Right. Yeah.
We've got loads of little guy friends. A single one out.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing two or three. It's all good, you know.
Loads of little independents that helping us out, and we're pals. You know, I was at the Hornet of the day in Chichester, and with Glenn, who's head of camera there, and he's like, we did a talk at the start of the year, and he wants to come back. Yeah, a week before, you know, with Tom of Bottle and Jug in Worthing, he was always shouting about locals, and he was great natural wine as well. And then you got Gareth and Gemma at Birno Evil in Worthing, who were just doing their own thing, and got a lovely little setup. There's Jen at the Independent Pub, there's Jen at the Hand in Hand. Oh, all these people, all these wonderful people, Patrick Lewis. Oh, it just goes on and on. I'm forgetting so many, but yeah, they're all helping each other out. It's great.
Nice. Good list. The beauty of a podcast is I get to do show notes where I can put URLs and notes in that live with the podcast. When people download it, they get those notes. And so I'll play this back and capture those ones you just reeled off.
I will say, is the unique place in our hearts, me and Andrew, live at either end of one road in Brighton. And in the middle of that road, there is a pub called the Jolly Brewer, run by our good friends, Jim and Matty. And it's a very unique place. They kind of took it over. It used to be a fighting pub. there was barely anything left on the walls by the time they took it over.
On a good Friday night. Yeah.
And now it's like a sort of wonderful community pub. They sell our beer, and they sell, you know, Star of Primer, and it's just great. And everyone's in there, you know, all sorts, all walks of life. and it's just they've really turned it into a wonderful thing. But outside there's a huge ancient kind of picture of the Tamplin's Brewer, which is a really old brewery from 100 years ago, and it fills the wall of the pub. It's packed full of heritage.
Nice.
And yeah, that's a great spot if you're in Brighton for a pub and an interesting conversation, or three, then the Jolly Brewer is a great spot.
Lovely. Thank you for that. I do have a wrap-up question, and we'll need an answer from each of you, which is, what would be your ultimate happy hour? And I'm looking for where you would be, who you'd be with, and what you would be drinking. Who'd like to go first?
Yeah, do we go far afield? Do we keep it close?
Wherever you like, with whoever you wish, and drink whatever you want.
Blimey, it sounds like the ultimate night, doesn't it?
But only for an hour.
Only for an hour.
Well, if it's only for an hour, I'd probably just go down the road.
No, you know, happy hours sometimes are 5 or 6 hours, aren't they? People abuse the English language all over the place. So.
One of my most fond craft beer memories was coming out of the McKellar Beer Festival thing in Copenhagen,
yep,
and hearing this death metal, kind of Nordic death metal, mm-hmm, and like just being drawn to it, and it ended up being outside War Pigs,
right,
in Copenhagen. And I'd love to go for a happy hour then again, because I really enjoyed that. That was a good time, and I'll be with Andy. Yeah.
Good chat. What would you be drinking when you were in War Pigs?
Just some crazy IPA, 3 Floyds, yeah, Colour, probably, and have some ribs. Yeah.
Yeah, barbecue's amazing. I'm lucky enough to have spent quite a lot of time at War Pigs. Good shout, Andrew. Yeah. Andy?
Oh, I'll go far afield. We mentioned our local buddies. I get in trouble again. No. I'll go Garage. I'll go Garage, Barcelona.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love a bit of Catalonia. Those guys, soupy goodness. Yeah, I'd take Barcelona.
Anybody you want to take along apart from Andrew?
a leading question. I'd sit there with Alberto, the owner, and have a good chat, which is how I met him originally.
Nice.
When I was there once, yeah. We were both wearing good shirts. We had a great bonding session. It was fun.
Would you be eating menu of the day as well?
Yeah, probably a little menu del dia. Keep me going.
And nobody loves garage beers more than I do, but would you be drinking their beers, or is there anything else that you'd like to bring in for the day? Yeah, you're happy with that, yeah?
I'd be drinking all of their beers. It's worth
I mean, they're fabulous, aren't they?
Cruise along the bar.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Excellent. Gentlemen, it's been a lot of fun. Really appreciate your time. Really enjoyed your company this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure, gents. Thanks very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Rob.
Cheers.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, bye. Coming up in the next few weeks, we have interviews with some of the UK's most exciting craft breweries. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you decide to subscribe to the podcast so you receive each episode automatically every Tuesday morning. If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends and leave us a review in your podcast app. It really helps others to discover the show. Full details on all our podcasts can be found at thisweekincraft.beer. You can also follow This Week in Craft Beer on Instagram, Facebook and YouTube. Coming soon from This Week in Craft Beer is a brand new podcast mini-series entitled So You Want to Build a Brewery? But don't worry, there'll be no brewing advice administered here. Instead, we'll be focusing on everything but the brewing, looking at some of the fine details that need to be attended to if you want to build a great business in today's competitive market. We've partnered with some of the most innovative suppliers to the UK craft brewing industry to bring you a short series of episodes, each focused on a specific aspect which can really make a difference to your business. Please subscribe now so you don't miss an episode. Launching on Friday the 28th of August, it's So You Want to Build a Brewery?